On AM 930 WEOL, 15 minutes after 4 o'clock, we're happy to have you with us. Andy Bulbarch and Matt Douglas with you up until 5, and then it's time for the WEOL Football Forecast Show. Speaking of football, Cleveland Browns taking their show way on the road, jumping across the pond. They will be in London on Sunday morning taking on the Minnesota Vikings. And here to talk Browns with us is the Browns beat reporter at the Chronicle-Telegram, Scott Petrek. Scott, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
So far, so good. And I wish we could say the same about the Browns, but I feel like we've been saying that about the Browns for a very long time. It just seems like no matter how many times they go right back to the chalkboard, they just can't seem to get it right. One of the things that puzzles me, Scott, is the fact that there's so much back and forth at quarterback. Do you think all that back and forth is halting the long-term growth of DeShone Kizer?
Yeah, I think it's hurting him for sure. You know what? I understand why Hugh Jackson has done it. I mean, I get the reasoning, right? He's trying to win games. He's worried about 52 other guys on the roster. He's said repeatedly, you can't turn the ball over. We can't win like that. So I get it. However, I think he's almost cutting his nose off despite his face. You got to give this kid a chance to play himself out of his mistakes, you know, play himself out of this funk that he's in. And when he yanked him against the Jets, I didn't like it. When he benched him against Houston, I didn't like it. When he yanked him last week against the Titans, I didn't like it. And my thought is that in the Jets and Titans games, they're only down by 3. Give the kid a chance to come back and win the game, right? Those are winnable games. And what would do more for this kid's confidence and the team's belief in him if he rallied himself, got out of his own way, and went and won a game? And by putting him on the sidelines, you don't give him that chance. So I do think it's hurt his development. I'm not saying it's the damage is irreversible or anything. I just don't think he's helping DeShone Kizer. And that's sad because this season needs to be all about DeShone Kizer and seeing how good he can be.
Scott, you bring up the fact that DeShone Kizer's been yanked the last couple of games, and I suppose you can point fingers kind of here and there and everywhere, but it does seem like they're throwing the ball an awful lot. A big part of that is due to the unsuccess, I guess would be the best way to put it, of the running game. Do you think the Browns need to maybe try and run it a few more times to get Kizer a little more comfortable in there?
Yeah, you know what? I don't think it would hurt. I do think defenses are doing everything they can to take away the run and put the pressure on Kizer to beat them, which makes sense for a rookie quarterback, especially a rookie quarterback that doesn't have any weapons on the outside. So I think teams are going to say, hey, we're going to take away the run. You beat us through the pass. And Hugh Jackson says, well, let's try to beat him through the pass. I also find it interesting that we talked to Joe Thomas a couple weeks ago before he got hurt, and he was talking about how you need to pass to win in this league. And while you might be able to say, okay, we're going to run the ball 35 times a game and it keeps you in games and maybe you win a couple, that's not best for the long-term development of a quarterback and an offense. So I think Hugh Jackson is kind of trying to manage all those things and get his quarterback and his offense to be what he wants them to be long-term, and that doesn't help in the short term, you know. But I would like to see him establish some kind of running threat so at least you can run some play action with DeShone Kizer. I talked to him last week about it, and he said he was really good at that at Notre Dame and loves running those plays. So why not kind of try to incorporate more of that?
Again, we're talking with Scott Petrek, Browns beat reporter at the Chronicle-Telegram. Don't forget to check out all of Scott's work at brownszone.com. Boy, to get back to the root of the discussion here about, you know, benching him and then putting him back in to start. He's starting again in London against Minnesota this week. I don't know, Scott. When I look at this, this kind of leads me to believe that Hugh might be feeling a little bit more pressure than I thought he might at this stage in the season, just because I'm sure he's probably feeling the pressure in that he's only won once since he was hired. You get that same impression that maybe he is yanking him, then putting him back in, then yanking him, then putting him back in. You think he's feeling more pressure than he had anticipated at this point in the season?
Without a doubt. And I think part of that's internal pressure, just from himself, that he's so desperate to win games and he works so hard to win, and he gets to Sunday and it's a 3-point game and he says, oh, you know, I'm going to pull this kid because I think I got a better chance to win with Cody Kessler. And then I think there's external pressure because it's just natural that if you lose, if you're 1-22, It's awfully hard to keep a job in this league as a head coach. So I think all those factors are in play, even though Hugh would try to deny feeling that pressure. But I think it's natural. I think it's affected his decision-making at quarterback and other game management decisions. So I do think that's a factor in it. And, you know, I think it's natural, but I don't like it. You know, I think you have to have a longer-term plan. And it's frustrating because Hugh Jackson will sit down on a Wednesday and say, hey, we're going to ride Deshaun Kizer with the highs and the lows, and I have complete confidence in him. And then, you know, 4 days later on Sunday in the heat of the moment, he goes, you know what, forget that, I'm benching this kid.
It's tough to figure out. It really is, because you're right. You'd like to think that if they were going to ride and die with this guy, they're going to take the lumps along the way. But it just seems like you're messing with that kid's head every time you take him out when it seems like he might make a mistake. And sometimes you just got to let those guys work through those problems. And I don't know, Scott, I look at where this team was last year. There was little to no hope. And I can't say the situation's any different right now than when you look at this team. Do you think that they're any better or any worse than they were a year ago at this time?
Yeah, that's interesting. I've been trying to think about that, and it feels the same. You know, I mean, 0-7 feels like 0-7. You know, I think you can point to individual players and say, okay, well, you know, they have Jamie Collins this year. He wasn't here for all of last year. You know, Myles Garrett, you can point to. Maybe David Njoku. But overall, in the defense, I mean, the defense has improved. But overall, no. I think overall you're an 0-7 team with significant flaws. And the only way I would feel significantly better about the direction of this organization were, number one, if they won some games. But outside of that is if Deshaun Kizer looked like a franchise quarterback. And obviously he has not yet. So if he ever did, if he ever started to look like a Carson Wentz or Deshaun Watson, you could say, hey, at least the Browns have the key piece. But until quarterback is settled at all, then I think this, you know, organization is going to feel like it has no direction.
Scott, I still remember that one win last year on Christmas Eve against San Diego. After the game, Joe Thomas, Gary Barnidge were right next to Hugh Jackson. They gave him the game ball. There were tears in some of the guys' eyes after that one. It really seems like Hugh Jackson is a player's type of coach. Do you get that sense that still that feeling in the locker room?
I do. I do. And I'm working on a story for Sunday's paper, just about Hugh and how he's dealing with all the losses, you know, and the players say they can tell how important it is to him, but he's also shows up Wednesday and he's still the same positive guy. He's a player's coach, you know, he really doesn't rip guys in the media. You know, I think he talks to him straight forward behind closed doors, but supports him in the media like he probably should. So I do think the guys like him. That doesn't mean he's a good coach. Doesn't mean he's ever going to get it figured out, but I think it means the guys will continue to play hard for him and they want to have success for him, which, you know, hurts them even more that they've not been able to have any. And, you know, one win in 2 years, it's hard not to win more games in this league. It really is. We're seeing something, and I know Browns fans hate it, but it's really unusual for a team to be this bad, because usually you can just kind of fall backward into a win once in a while.
Right, and I think that's the puzzling thing about this whole process. Since they came back into the league in 1999, the way that this league is designed, you can't be bad, you would think. Like, it just doesn't seem like you should be this bad for this long, because the league gives you opportunities, if you're awful, to get better the next year. Yep. And that's part of what makes the Browns situation so puzzling, that they've been bad for two decades. And that just, when you look at these guys play, you don't see any kind of optimism. Like, there's no sign that, hey, you know what, this guy's great, he could be great next year. Like, it's like there's no light at the end of the tunnel with this team. And that leads me to something else here too. I read something earlier today that Corey Coleman traveled with the team to London. And why would he be traveling? He's still inactive, isn't he?
Oh yeah, he's on injured reserve. I think they believe Corey can still be a cornerstone piece. And they want him to be around the team. They want him to go through practice weeks and go through game preparation. And Nyland, young kid, I think he's had some maturity problems. And the organization feels he's better off when he's surrounded by the teammates and by the team. And that's why they have him there. I kind of turned up my eyebrows when I saw, or raised my eyebrows when I saw that as well. But that's how they're approaching it with Corey. And to go back to your previous point, you're right. And there's a bunch of reasons why the Browns have been as bad as they have for so long. But I think the reason they're historically bad right now is, number one, the front office tore it down by not re-signing some of their veteran players and cutting other veteran key contributors. And then they haven't prioritized signing a quarterback and finding a quarterback. And until you find a quarterback in this league, not a ton of the rest of it matters. And, you know, the Browns have been bad at finding a quarterback since they've been back for the most part. And this new regime led by Sashi Brown has failed on multiple times to try to land that guy. And until they get it corrected, or somebody gets it corrected, they're not going to be good. Now, maybe they won't be 1-15 bad, but they're not going to be good.
And I apologize for asking you this right now, because I know you probably get asked this all the time, but I have to throw it out there anyways, because things have gotten this bad. Do you get the impression that a change will take place before we get to the end of the season? Knowing Jimmy Haslam and how impatient he tends to be, do you think that there's a good chance that a change could happen, whether it be a change in the coaching staff or a change in the front office? You get an impression that a big change could happen before the end of the season?
I have not gotten that sense being around the team, you know, the last several weeks, really. Having said that, you know, say they get beat 50-0 by the Vikings on Sunday, nothing would shock me, because you mentioned Jimmy's impatience. There's a history of coaches getting fired on the way back from London. I don't expect that to happen. But I will say this. If you're Jimmy Haslam and you're 1-22 under this coaching staff and this front office, everything has to be on the table. And that includes blowing it up yet again. So I think he wants to give these guys the final 9 games to see progress. You know, if they happen to win 4 games over the last 9, I think that Jimmy could say, you know what, it's headed in the right direction. I can go continuity. I can go stability. But if they win 0, 1, or 2 games, I'd be shocked if there weren't significant changes. I don't know what those changes would be, but I would expect significant changes.
When you say significant changes, how many times can you blow things up, I guess? Don't you have to keep some pieces in place somewhere?
Well, I mean, who knows? If you think, you know, and I've ripped Jimmy for not sticking with things, not having any stability. So I hate to kind of talk out of both sides of the mouth, but if you believe that these guys are doing it wrong, then you can't keep them, especially if you have 5 draft picks in the first 2 rounds next year. If you believe Sashi Brown has screwed up the draft for 2 years, how do you give him a 3rd one? So I think it could be a complete blow-up. You know, this is assuming they stay on the path that they're on. Maybe it would be adding a football person above Sashi Brown, or to work with Sashi Brown to help that, you know, to help him pick players. That would be kind of the lesser move rather than a complete rebuild. But like I said, I think everything's on the table if they go 0-16, 1-15, 2-14.
Well, Scott, we'll close it out on this, just because we've got to address Joe Thomas. You know, he had mentioned that, yeah, after you guys spoke with him after the surgery was done on his arm, tearing his triceps, sounded unsure about whether or not he wanted to come back next year, and that leads us to believe, you know, is he going to come back at all? You think that was kind of heat of the moment, or is that Joe Thomas just addressing this thing and saying, look, realistically, I have no idea how I'm going to come back from a triceps injury, or do you think emotion played a big part of it? Is he getting to that point in his career where he's just kind of getting tired of being a part of an environment like this, and he's just not sure how much longer he can go on?
Well, I'll tell you, I did not get the impression on the call that Joe was leaning toward retirement. He was obviously non-committal. There's no doubt about that. But I didn't get a sense that, yeah, he's done. I think Joe is getting old. You know, I mean, football-wise, he's 32. He's going to turn 33. He's dealt with several injuries. While he hasn't missed any time, he's dealt with injuries. He's in pain a lot. He can't practice like he used to. So for the last couple years, he's thought after the season, he's reassessed and said, no, you know, I still love football. I still feel good enough. I'm still playing well enough to come back and continue his career. And he's just going to go through the same process in this offseason. Yeah, I think, you know, the injury, because it's a major one, could be the point where he just says, you know what, I've had enough. But I also think from the other side, he looks at it and says, you know what? I played 10,363 straight snaps. I'm not going out laying on the ground, rolling around, screaming with an injury. So if I had to bet on it, I'd bet he comes back. But I think you do need to see how the rehab goes. You know, 6 to 9 month rehab, I think he's going to want to see how he feels in January and February.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of it, too. I mean, again, when you're going through the kind of things he has gone through, it would be very, very easy in his position.